Good evening, Hope. Just a couple of quick announcements before we get on with the program. There's a Queer as Hope LGBTQ support party unconference thing being held in Hoover. Actually starting now, but going on till 10 p.m. So if you want to check that out now or later, that would be cool. Just remember, through this whole event, live streaming is happening of talks. So if there's a keynote or a popular talk going on and you can't get in, there are many screens all over here and the mezzanine where talks are being live streamed and you can still watch them. Mm-hmm. Also, important point, Club Mate bottles do not evaporate, unfortunately. So when you get up and leave a talk, please take your trash with you. There are many garbage cans all over the place around here, just waiting, hungrily waiting for your Club Mate bottles and napkins and everything. Hackers Got Talent, tonight at midnight in the next room over there in Nother, there is a talent contest where we want you, hackers, to show us what you got. So, signups are still going on in the info desk. Space is limited. If you'd like to get in on this, there are prizes involved. There are a few judges, some luminaries from this scene, and we want to see what you can do for us. And that's about it. It's my pleasure to introduce to you the next talk, Stealing Bitcoin with Math. Please give a warm welcome to Filippo Valsorda and Ryan Castellucci.
I'd like to start out by thanking everyone for coming to our talk. I'm Ryan Castellucci. I work for a company called WhiteOps, but this is just a side project. At DEF CON 23, I gave a talk called Cracking Cryptocurrency Brain Wallets. Since then, I've co-authored a couple of papers about Bitcoin cracking.
So, hi, I'm Filippo Valsorda. I work at Cloudflare, but just as above, this is a completely side personal project. At the last Hacking the Box in Kuala Lumpur, I spoke about using ECDSA mistakes to compromise Bitcoin private keys. Now, we all know that meth is scary and dangerous, and you should if you see someone doing meth, you should say something, right? Good. But how is math exactly dangerous for Bitcoin? Obviously, to understand this, we need to understand a bit more about how Bitcoin works. Now, these are the fundamental pieces of Bitcoin. You start with a private key, which is nothing else than random bytes, and you convert that into a public key using some crypto black magic that I'm not going to go into the details of right now. And then you hash that public key to get an address. Now that you have an address, you can use it to receive Bitcoin from other people, because people can use this address to send Bitcoins they own themselves to you. All these addresses are published on the Bitcoin public ledger, which is called the blockchain. So every time an address receives some money, some Bitcoin, that is logged on this append-only blockchain. And anyone has a complete idea at any time of all the addresses that hold any balance. Now, whoever had the private key that generated this address can use that private key to spend the Bitcoin it just received on that address. So far, so good. This is probably something you already knew about Bitcoin. And so obviously you can also imagine that if what we want to do is stealing Bitcoin without literally just hacking into the server that stores them or buying a $5 wrench to get the money out of the person that owns the Bitcoins, what we will want to do is to somehow compromise or guess or figure out the private key. And here, obviously, the simplest thing that could work is to just try them all, sequentially. Now, you start with the private key number 1, because the private key number 0 is not valid. And you do the crypto black magic, you get the public key, you hash into an address, you go to the blockchain, and you check if that private key holds any balance. And then you do the same for 2, you do the same for 3. Now, I swear that this is not all the talk is about. We're not here to tell you that you can just go over all the private keys and steal everybody's Bitcoin. But stupid things sometimes actually work.
As part of my DEF CON talk, I released a tool called BrainFlare, which was used for cracking brain wallets. But I've since modified it so that it can also do this attack. And sometimes doing as Filippo said, doing a stupid thing really fast is a decent attack. So I did a scan. We actually did find some results. I don't know if I'd say I was surprised, but results. I went through about the first 150 billion possible keys, got 149 hits. This was back in February. One interesting thing I noticed is that there were a lot of patterns that looked kind of like people were deliberately leaving Bitcoin around playfully to see who would take it. And that's really interesting because from some of that, I was able to infer that somebody has actually tried guessing the first 700 trillion keys. And it looks like it was over the course of less than a year. So I'm guessing they have something faster than BrainFlare, probably a big old botnet or a GPU cracker. But the highest possible private key is really, really big. I don't know that we have a word for this number, but it's large. Sequentially searching keys got old. And what's the next thing that I can do that is also dumb, but slightly more creative? Well, patterns. So this first one appears to have been generated by taking the string 1234 in ASCII and using it as the least significant bits of the private key. These are all real private keys that were really associated with Bitcoin at some point. They are all long since emptied, though. So I tried putting strings in. That didn't really work. I tried keys that only had a few bits set. That got a few. Some stupid patterns, starting with 42. 42 is a great number. Patterns. And so that got old, too. So I had to get a little creative again to find more things. Again, these are all real private keys that really were associated with Bitcoins at some point. So the formatted addresses you see aren't actually what's used in the Bitcoin protocol. There's actually a raw format. So I took all of the raw formatted addresses and tried them as least significant bits of private keys, and I got hits there too. I don't know why. And then I tried the, this is a little out of scope of the talk, but every block in the blockchain has a specific hash. I tried running all of those through. I got hits there too. Then I just tried dumping the entire blockchain, each offset one byte at a time through there. That got hits as well, and I don't even know what those are.
Okay. So this was all fun and laughs, but obviously just searching the entire private key space sequentially or by shooting in the dark is not exactly something we can keep doing. So we need something to limit the search space of possible private keys. And when you're looking for this, something that is very useful to know about is brain wallets. Now, the idea of brain wallets is to be able to control some money, some Bitcoin, with just something that you can keep in your head. And this may seem like a good idea because nobody can read your mind, right? But as we learned, a fast computer can probably take a very good guess at anything that you are able to remember yourself. So how brain wallets work is that they just add another step in the derivation process we've seen before. So to generate the private key, they just take some memorable string, like correct horse battery staple, or whatever you're using, and hash it to get a private key that then it's used to generate the public key, to generate the address, which then used to receive money. And then by just remembering that string, you can move that money and use it to pay for something else. Sure, the idea of using passwords to save money is already kind of unsettling, but Since we've learned so much about password storage and how to make sure that database dumps are not cracked, you'd think, well, obviously they used something slow, something like bcrypt or scrypt that is hard to brute force, right? You'd be wrong. They used SHA-256.
A perfectly Cromulent hash algorithm. So for my DEF CON talk, I did a bunch of research into cracking brain wallets, and I went through the transaction history of a lot of them that I was able to find. Correct Horse battery staple was, in fact, used. It's had about 15 bitcoins go through it, give or take, and over 4,000 transactions. There's a complicated reason for that. If you want to know why, find me later. Then Bitcoin is awesome. Had 500 Bitcoin put into it at once, and then somebody else found it. And whoever put it there originally was sad. My favorite, though, is the empty string. Nobody would ever guess that one. That has had almost 60 Bitcoin go through it, and 50 of it was all at once. Somebody had a really bad day, because it was stolen instantly. The quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog has had about 100 Bitcoin go through it. So, yeah, people do some things. So, of course, I'm not the only one who's had this idea. There are plenty of other people who have gone through with quite extensive dictionaries and guessed brain wallets. This fellow was active on Reddit and the Bitcoin forums for a while. He would crack the addresses, sweep them off for safekeeping. I have no idea how much he actually kept, but anytime somebody would complain about getting their brain wallet ripped off, if he had the key, he'd show up and offer to return it. Some people were not so nice. This other fellow came on Reddit to complain, because that's what people do on Reddit. He lost 4 bitcoins out of his brain wallet, and the passphrase was a line from an obscure poem in Afrikaans. So somebody had some pretty serious dictionaries they were throwing at this, which is really interesting. And if you're curious what sort of performance can be done with this, BrainFlare itself, in the latest version, the biggest job I've run in it was checking all 6 character ASCII passwords. That ended up being a search space of a little less than 750 billion. I did that in less than 24 hours for $50 on Amazon's cloud computing service. So.
Can I take this?
Yep.
I mean, Ryan? So, to hammer in the point of how dangerous it is to essentially take a password dump that is already public because it's in the blockchain and putting money on it after not even using scrypt, we're going to lose some money on stage. So what we're going to run here is a simple script that now will generate a brain wallet with a short enough keys. That's the brain wallet password. And it will send some money to it. And if the demo gods are with us, OK, so this is the blockchain.info page. And this is our transaction that just deposited some money in this very vulnerable brain wallet.
It's currently spreading through the network. And with a little luck, somebody will be watching.
Obviously, nobody can.
Oh, there we go.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure this guy loves us. He's been stealing our test wallets all day.
Okay. Obviously, nobody can compute all the ASCII 5 characters phrases in such a short time. So what happened here probably is that they have a huge database of all the possible addresses and mapped to the original private keys, so that as soon as they see a transaction depositing money in such an address, they can immediately, it took 40 seconds or less, steal the money that was deposited in it. Sadly enough, it used to be that even stronger brain wallets would be stolen on the fly. And instead, right now, we still have some money on a 6-character brain wallet that nobody has wrapped, which was kind of disappointing. Anyway, this guy was not disappointed because you can see that it has 4 Bitcoin, and that's been just like since November 2015.
Yeah, that's currently worth about $3,000.
Okay, so got the point. We shouldn't be using password to save money on them after they get published. Good. So brainwallet.org had this other button that is inspired so much more trust, this random button. A random private key is definitely something that nobody can figure out because the search space is so vast, right? So what you will do instead of making a brain wallet with correct horse battery staple is that you click the random button and you write down the private key, maybe. Yeah, good. Now, something that you should be asking, I guess, is where does this random value come from? Well, obviously, the site owner is responsible, and it's probably coming from the local browser, from JavaScript. So you can check the code that generates it. And indeed, it's this function called crypto util randbytes, which I'm sure is absolutely fine function that is not...
Sorry. So there's still research to be done on this, but the weakest case I could find was the Firefox random number generator. At the time this site was popular, it would be seeded with the number of milliseconds since the Unix epoch, which, if you don't know, is midnight January 1st, 1970. XORed with two pointers, and the way the two pointers were chosen, they were almost always very close in value. So you could just ignore the pointers and figure it would be about right if you just use milliseconds. So if the seed is predictable, somebody can predict the seeds and replay what would have been generated. And in fact, this happened. As we said earlier, people go to Reddit to complain about theft. And this guy lost a couple bitcoins and posted his address, hoping that somebody would be nice and return them. Unfortunately, he was not in luck there. So I took a look at the transaction history on this address and looked at the time it was initially funded. And I ran a scan. And I was able to find the timestamp, which was very close to the time the address was originally funded. This is, I think, a date mid-2013. And with the seed, I was able to recover the private key and verify that it matched the address posted on Reddit.
So, good. Now we know another way not to generate private keys. Math random. Good. Note taken. Now, to graduate to the next kind of attacks, however, we need to expand our Bitcoin knowledge a bit. We're going to be talking now about transactions. I've mentioned before that how money moves in Bitcoin is that something is published on the blockchain, right? A transaction on the high level is just this public statement that says, so I own this money, and please make this money be owned by this other address now instead. And this is a payment. You sign this statement with your private key, which proves that whoever owned that money before, owned that address, actually wants that money to change hands. And this is recorded on blockchain, so we have access to this gigantic database of statements with their signatures and public keys. So we can take any transaction, and we'll see the public key that sent the money, the signature from the corresponding public private key, and the target addresses, which are meant to be the next owners. Okay? So obviously, the idea here is that anyone can verify that the public key actually hashes to the address that used to own that money, and they can use the public key and the signature to verify that the statement is true. And so the entire network can go to their ledger, to their balance, and say, okay, this address now has a different balance. And this is how money is, how Bitcoin accounting works. Now, obviously, it's not exactly as simple as I put it, and it's much more flexible than that, because transactions are actually full scripts that essentially pose a challenge to someone that has to be solved to be spent. But usually, this challenge is just sign a statement that says you want to move the money. So back to our high-level approach, because this is all we really need to start cracking. Now, next step is, what exactly is this signature, right? So the signature is a ECDSA signature in Bitcoin. ECDSA is the elliptic curve digital signature algorithm, an algorithm that does two jobs. With a private key and a message, makes a signature, and with a signature, a public key and a message, says yes, it's true, or no, it's false. Now, a fair warning here. ECDSA is math. So we are about to show math on the slides. If there's anyone with serious sensibility to the topic, you should leave the room now. There is math ahead. Have I been clear? Excellent. So this is how a ECDSA signature looks like. I warned you. Now, let's break it down into pieces a bit. We have G, which is the global curve base point. This is always the same, is a property of the curve, and all Bitcoin transactions use the same. Then there's K. K is this random number that every time anyone makes a transaction, they have to come up with. It's a long number, it's 256 bits, and it's supposed to be, again, unpredictable, random, and new every time you make a transaction. And then there's D, which is the private key. The private key is just the one we've seen in the first slides, just interpreted as a number. Because, again, ECDSA is old math, so all string of bytes are just interpreted as this very long-ass number and used in normal math. And finally, there's Z, which is the hash of the message you are trying to sign. In Bitcoin, the message is, if you remember, the sentence that says, the script that says, this money I used to own, now please let it be owned by this other address. Okay? So we have the pieces. Now, the signature is made of two parts. One part is called R, and it's just that random number multiplied by the curve base point. That generates a coordinate on the curve, and we take the x coordinate. For as much as you need to know, it's simply an operation that maps a number into another number. So you go from k, which is this random long number, to r, which is this other very long number that could be as random as far as you know. But it only depends on k, because g is fixed. Okay? And then you have s, which is the other half of the signature, which is just the result of that formula. That's literally big int math that the computer does. It takes the hash, interpreted as a number, adds R times D, which is the private key, and divides everything by K. Now, I'm not here to explain you why this works, because that is what you need a cryptographer for. But the important thing to know is that as long as you publish these two numbers, anyone with the public key can verify the signature. And that's exactly what Bitcoin does. Every time you make a transaction, you use your private key, you generate a new K number, and you publish these two huge numbers for everyone to know that you actually want that transaction to happen. So far, so good. This was a lot of math. Sorry. So now let's see what we can do of fun with this. Let's see what happens if we know K. Because we've said that K needs to be, commonly called a nonce. But this is kind of a misnomer in ECDSA, because it's not enough to use the number once, nonce, but it also must be unpredictable and random looking. So if you instead know K, you can do what you've learned in algebra and just put this formula down as an equation and solve for the private key. Look at this formula. Here you have S, which is this, the other half of the signature, which you have because it's published on the blockchain. You have R, which is published on the blockchain. You have Z, which is the hash of the message, which is published on the blockchain. And now if you also have K, you can recover the private key. So you take this from the blockchain, you take this from hashing the message, and then if you have that last piece, K, the nonce, then you know the private key. And you fall. Sorry. I'm sorry. So how would you know that you have R and you're about to fall? Well, you would know because you would notice that R is exactly K times G. So if you have an hypothesis about what K that has been used is, you can derive R and look for R on the blockchain.
And again, the stupidest attack that can possibly work. We just search sequentially. I will point out that this is actually searching not for R for a particular transaction, but for R in any transaction all at once. So we let this run overnight. It only got 3 hits, and we only ran through the first 9 billion or so. And I did that like on Thursday. But
now, this is what. Again, the stupidest attack. Now we know that if we can figure out K, we can use a signature to recover the private key. But again, searching linearly the entire space won't work because the nonce is just as long as the private key. So there's another attack you can pull out. The math doesn't stop, I'm sorry. Now you can take two transactions that you've noticed have the same R. And if they have the same R, it means they have the same K, right? And take the other half, which is the one that is different, and try to figure out, okay, so what are the parts of this other half, of this S? Well, there's the private key, which might be the same if it was two different transactions sent from the same wallet, from the same address. The K, we just said that it's equal because we've noticed that R is the same in the two transactions. R, the same. So we just group together all the parts that are the same, this half. And if we just do S1 minus S2, what do you think is left? All the parts that are equal cancel out. So now we have this formula, S1 minus S2. So the second half of the first signature and the second half of the second signature, their difference is equal to that. Okay.